Bloody Click.
I am today going to post from one of our other podcasts, First Watch Rewatch, our newest episode, our latest episode, came out just a few days ago on the 15th, and is about the 1927 movie Metropolis. Now, you're going to see in there that I say 27, 84, and 2010, because what Ty and I did is we were going to focus on the 1984 version of the movie Metropolis. It had like a rock soundtrack. It had a synth-like score, all this other stuff, and it was colorized. And in its time, it was kind of attacked, but it set off this thing to restore this classic science fiction movie. So it ended up, Ty and I, talking about the original 27 version, which is lost forever, the 84 version, and then the 2010 version, which is the most complete one. I'll have you listen to us to just hear the story, the crazy story about how all of this happened. But originally, I was going to do this topic for the Ex-Millennial Man. And I thought, oh, it'd be better work for First Watch or Rewatch. And I thought, hey, why can't I do it for both? So I thought I'd record it, put it out there, and then make it our show this week so the audience for this podcast can also discover it. And please go over to First Watch Rewatch and follow us there. Subscribe. We do the first and 15th, and we do a couple of episodes. We do like 8 episodes and take a break and do another 8, but there's some really great movies in there. Or you can go over to publicformproductions.com. That's where all the podcasts I work on, well, not all that I work on, but the ones that I am the creator of, those are all over there. So you can go and check out those podcasts. But sit back and enjoy this incredible conversation. And before I hand it over to myself and Ty, I want to say I do say a lot of names incorrectly in here, okay? German's not my language. I've never taken any German classes, neither had Ty. We did our best that we could. I do appreciate, nobody was mean to me, but after this came out on First Watch Rewatch, I did get a few messages about proper pronunciation. So do know that you're going to be seeing that. And I don't really care what a Nazi's first name is. I wasn't going to look it up anyways anywhere, so I'm not going to apologize about that one. But please enjoy this conversation. Again, go follow, subscribe to First Watch Rewatch. We've got some, they're not all great movies like Metropolis, but they are interesting movies to be talked about. And we'll see you guys next week. First Watch Rewatch. Here's a podcast where we go through the thrift store of pop culture, and sometimes, well, most of the time we find something that sucks, but sometimes we find something that is glorious. And before I talk about this film, and this is going to be a little bit different, we're not going to necessarily go through the film, but talk about its history, because it's a well-known film, is I've got to take my heart, which is the bond between my hand and head or whatever, and that's the other host, Ty. How are you today, Ty?
Hi, everybody. This movie, regardless of what you told me off mic about Nazis and whatnot, this movie is fantastic.
We're talking about the movie Metropolis. Now, we're more talking about the Giorgio Moroder, the 1984 version of Metropolis. There's a reason we're talking about that, because I'm going to tell you the history of this movie to begin with, but this movie only exists today. The only reason you know about this movie today, the only reason any of us do, is because of Giorgio Moroder, okay?
Yeah.
This movie would have probably been lost forever. And not just he, I'm going to talk about some other really famous people that had a shot at, quote-unquote, readapting it or remaking it. And I'm also going to tell you how people were really pissed off at Moroder after he made this movie. And because film snobs are film snobs, let's just put it that way. He took a movie that they only got to watch in their little clubhouses with their clove cigarettes, and he made it popular. He, quote unquote, brought it to the masses. And I'll actually play the Siskel and Ebert review for it later on here. And it's interesting, even the way they viewed it, the way they looked at it. Spoiler alert, it's gone on. Roger Ebert has listed this as one of the greatest films to ever be made, period. Before I get into all of it, I just want to know your thoughts on this movie.
Heard about it for years and years and years. Like, even back when you and I lived together in our townhouse, you always had a copy of this movie, and the robot on the copy always intrigued me. I was always like, what is this? What's going on? And you would tell me it's a silent movie, and being a 20-year-old kid, I'm like, I'm not going to watch a silent movie. Why would I waste my time with that? And then I just kind of forgot about it, didn't know much about it. And then recently you started bringing it up, being that I'm older now and chaos of the United States or whatnot, this movie is really it was really timely to watch and very interesting to watch. I told you earlier when we talked to that I watched it, as I assume Fritz Lang wanted me to, which was on my telephone while my son umped a baseball game. I sat in my car, watched it. But that didn't take away from it for me. I'll spoil my review right off the bat. I think this movie is incredible. What I saw was amazing. I think to have this idea back in the 20s and to put it out there and to put it out there so boldly and just this is how we feel, this is what we think, is was really impressive and brave of the people to do that, because this is very much not a, this is very anti-dictator, very yes. anti-money and anti-capitalism and stuff like that. So
it's kind of anti-tech.
Yeah, absolutely. Anti-tech. I mean, that's the whole thing. But I was blown away. I'm glad you told me to watch the Marauder version, because I don't know that I could have done 2.5 hours of a silent movie. That seems like a lot. But with the music in this, I was able to follow the story better. And there's still, with any silent movie, they always tell you what's going on during big pivotal scenes and stuff like that. But it was cool with the music, because it was like watching this kick-ass old school music video with some of the raddest music of the 80s and some people that were on there. Like, I kept hearing things because I didn't know any of the music prior, and I kept like hearing these voices saying, that person sounds familiar. And then when the credits rolled, I was like, well, yeah, obviously it sounds familiar, because there are some heavy, heavy hitters from the 80s on this. I think this movie is must watch for everybody, especially now. And it's probably, it's not my favorite, but I think it's the most important movie you've had me watch today.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it definitely is. If we were to list the 5 most important films in the history of film, this is on that list. This is the first real science fiction movie.
Mm-hmm. I love sci-fi.
Of like ever. So, and you got to think about silent film at the time, is it was either these big epics like Birth of a Nation or Intolerance or something like that, or there are horror movies like Nosferatu or The Cabinets of Dr. Caligari. So this was big, and there's things this movie invented. The idea of miniature sets, and then they used mirrors to make it look like the people were on the sets. I know during the sequence where the robot is being turned into Maria, my wife asked me, was this effect made in the 1984 version? I go, no, that's in the 1927 version.
I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, so it had a lot to it, but I want to give you a little bit of history of this, because it is a fascinating history of movies. Now, Fritz Lang, who directed it, is a very well-known German director. And at this time, we're in what's called the Weimar Republic of Germany. This is after World War I, when the whole world said, you're at fault, and basically destroyed Germany. There was incredibly high inflation and incredibly corrupt government. But Fritz Lang, he was a guy. He and F.W. Murnau, these were the guys, the directors at the time. He'd been known to sleep around and stuff, but the guy who played Fredersen, his wife, Fritz Lang, had an affair with. And that dude was like, okay, you know, this was before really? They made it. Yeah, this is before they made Metropolis.
But okay.
Her name was Thea von Harber. So she wrote this book, but the book was written with the intent of making this movie. The movie, look, you go, I'm going to tell everybody this right now. It's one of these concepts, don't meet your heroes. Making movies back in the 1920s was not a very pleasant thing for the actor.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. There's a scene near the end of this movie where I said Fredder, my wife kept saying Freighter. She probably knows better than me, but I got Fredder.
Fredder is how I read it. Yeah. So.
There's a scene after the whole flood and everything where he's like keeps falling down and Joseph had his buddy has to pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
That was real. That actor could not stand because he had been...
Because the water was so cold.
He'd been standing in cold water for hours. So this is how it was. Now, of that, the people who loved being on that movie were all those kids. They were all from the poorest parts of Berlin. So for about a year, they got to live and have meals and toys to play with.
Wow.
And supposedly Fritz Lang was really, really nice to them. But the movie was long. It was 153 minutes. So 2 hours and 33 minutes long.
That's long.
Yeah. And it was the most expensive. It went like 3 times over budget. But some people say the most expensive movie ever by that time. It was definitely the most expensive German movie ever made at that time.
Mm.
And the U.S. had an agreement to show the movie, but we're like, we're not showing that whole damn movie. And here's where the story of it getting kind of lost in time. So okay. Originally, there were three cuts of the movie. US got their version, and they cut out a bunch of scenes and dropped the movie down to about 2 hours long. And then they did their premiere and everything of it. And then I forgot who the third cut, I think, was like Brazil or something like that. And they further cut it down. And then the German, UFA is the name of the company, but in Germany, they cut it down too. So we, to this day, do not have the original movie at all.
Sure.
The one I'm going to talk about, the most quote-unquote complete one, is still missing 10 minutes of the film. But what we do have is we have Theo von Harber's novel, and we have been able in time to find the script to the movie, because by the time Marauder made his film or recut it or whatever, all these people are dead. All right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to talk for a reason here that Fritz Lang in particular wanted nothing to do with this movie after it came out.
Okay.
Now, the movie, when it came out in the US, Germany, and stuff like that, almost everybody said the same thing. This movie is freaking audacious. It's bold. We've never seen anything like this. It's incredible. But a lot of critics did not like the script, did not like the story. And a lot of that was because they felt like it was communist. And in the 1920s, being communist was very, very bad.
Oh, okay.
As a matter of fact, famed science fiction writer who wrote The Time Machine, H.G. Wells, ripped this movie to shreds.
Really?
Yes.
Now, that's interesting.
He thought it was too depressing. And he thought the technology that a movie like this shows, it should be a happy future. And also, he didn't like that it was communist.
No. Okay.
So while the movie was a big commercial success, it was quote unquote critically not as well loved. But here's where the movie kind of disappears a little bit. So in the early 1930s, Frederick Goebbels, the like propaganda minister of the Nazi party, or is it Frederick or Heinrich? I don't care. I don't want to look it up, but let's just say Goebbels went to go meet with Fritz Lang and talked about how he and Hitler had seen this movie, and Hitler thought Fritz Lang should be making Nazi movies because this is the kind of movie we need. Well, Fritz Lang said, F that, and got the hell out of Germany and went to the United States.
Good for him. That was a smart move.
Now, his wife, I told you Fritz Lang liked to sleep around. He and Theo von Harber kind of think they had a very open marriage.
Sure.
But he did come home one day and found her in bed with like a 17-year-old Indian boy. And Fritz Lang's like, look, Nazis love my movie. I'm getting out of here. And Theo von Harber is like, what's wrong with the Nazis? I'll write Nazi movies as long as they let me keep my Indian lover boy, who she did marry, to be safe.
Okay. All right.
And during most of Hitler's reign, Theo von Harber wrote a lot of Nazi movies until finally she left when they started to come after her Indian husband.
Yeah.
Now, as for the actors, a lot of them some of them were pretty well established, like Frederson, the guy that played Rotwang, who Doc Brown in Back to the Future modeled his look after.
I just say, now that you say that, makes total sense. Yeah. Perfect sense.
Grot, the guy who was the head of the workers. These were all pretty well-known actors, and they continued to act in movies during the Nazi time. Now, somebody like Heinrich George, who played Grot, the guardian of the heart machine, the lead worker, he was an avowed communist, and he was in prison most of the time the Nazis were there. But he'd agree to make movies and to make propaganda movies, just regular movies, and he'd use those films to funnel in other communists and keep them safe.
Okay.
So he still did it. Gustav Frolik, who played Frederick, again, he did some movies. There's a lot of these people that we don't even know, like the Thin Man and stuff, because they've been cut out. But Brigitte Helm, who did Maria, this was her first film. She was really hot stuff. And she was, I think, 17 when she did this. By the age of 25, when the Nazis took over, she said, I'm done. I'm not doing this for you guys.
Good for her. And she is incredible.
Yeah, I know. She plays two parts.
Yeah.
I also want to quickly, Alfred Abel, the guy that played John Frederson, the head of Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
There is a rumor. So you've seen the old Nosferatu. The whole Count Orlok, the guy who plays Count Orlok. There's an entire movie with Willem Dafoe playing him where a lot of people thought he was a real vampire.
Oh, okay.
Here's the weird thing about it is whoever that actor is, it's like the only role they've ever done. Everybody's like, who the hell is this guy? a lot of people think it's actually Alfred Abel, the guy that played Frederson. And he'd done a bunch of movies. He's supposedly one of the people that's like the visual, one of the movies he's in the visual look of the Joker.
Huh.
But so he was, I mean, my point is some of these guys were pretty big, but Fritz Lang, when he ran off to the States, people would ask him about Metropolis. And he's like, it's kind of a silly movie, don't you think? And
kind of silly.
By the time the Nazis were gone late in his career, he actually said, when I made the movie, I liked it. When I saw the movie, I hated it. All these years later, he's like, that's a pretty good movie.
That's, yeah, I should say so.
So let's bring us to Giorgio Moroder. Now, before I get to that, this was, like I said, mostly in art houses. And it had been so cut up and it was hard to find a copy of it. Film's kind of jumpy. There's all sorts of it because we didn't preserve films back then the way we do now.
Oh, yeah.
But it was still around. People knew about it. And as a matter of fact, it came across the synthesizer of a German new wave, what do you want, electronic group, Kraftwerk, in the 1970s.
No, they're from the Simpsons. Yep. Sounds for my Kraftwerk records.
Yep. So Kraftwerk, they had this album, I think it was in 73, called Man Machine, one of their more famous albums. And there's a song on Man Machine called Metropolis. I'm going to play, it's about a minute into the song, because the very beginning of it, people know Kraftwerk, it's electronic music, and it's the beginning of electronic music. So you're not getting all these layers like Daft Punk. You're getting like one instrument layered onto another. But the first minute is very like, very this ambient sound. And then it kicks into this. This is all play. If you play this, sync this up with the beginning of the movie, this is the scene where the workers are marching in and shift changing and going to the machines.
Okay. Yeah. Reminded me of the Wall.
Yes. And as I say, this predates a lot of that stuff. This is 73. Yeah. And it's about an 8-minute song. It goes in the builds, and they say you watch the beginning of Metropolis. It fits up perfectly. So a lot of people had an idea. What if we put a modern soundtrack on top of this retro future movie? So UFA, the German company, decided that they would license out the movie to somebody to do that. And Kraftwerk, supposedly, they were like, we're not going to spend the money. No, we're just going to move on. But there are two people very, very interested in it, one of which is David Bowie, who was just coming off of Ziggy Stardust.
Ooh, good record.
He was looking for something new. And originally he was going to do an adaptation of George Orwell's book 1984. But Orwell had passed, but his widow was still alive and would not allow any adaptations of any of her late husband's work until she was dead. Bowie got kind of pissed about it. And then on tour one night, somebody gave him a copy of Metropolis, and he supposedly watched it like nonstop through a weekend. And thought, I'm going to make that movie. Well, the music producer he had worked with on the movie Cat People, which, do you know what that movie is?
No, I've never even heard of that movie.
That's a crazy movie. That's early like 80s. This woman learns that she is a descendant from like werecats, and the movie basically ends with, I think it's Malcolm McDowell, her having sex and then turning into a cat. It's a crazy movie.
Yeah. The any crazier than that pop, that neo-punk movie you made me.
No. Liquid Sky is in the place.
Liquid Sky, I can't think of the name.
Is in the place all its own. But Bowie had done some music for Cat People along with superstar music producer Giovanni Giorgio Moroder. Italian. Basically
the name.
Yes.
Still the dopest name ever.
Basically the guy that invented disco music. He took a Moog synthesizer, created an entirely new timing signature for music, and has, like, I could do an hour-long podcast on Moroder. He's worked with David Bowie, Falco, The Weeknd, Kylie Minogue, Irene Cara, Bonnie Tyler, Janet Jackson, Madeline Kahn, Melissa Manchester, Blondie. I mean, those are the regional people, the people that we would know.
He's like Rick Rubin, you know, for people my age.
Yes.
That's who he is.
He's won multiple Oscars. He won for the...
More successful Rick Rubin, I should probably say.
Well, no, I mean, he won for Midnight Express. And then he also, he did, his probably most famous score is probably from the movie Scarface.
I don't like that movie.
He did American Gigolo. He did The Neverending Story. He won the Oscar for What a Feeling, the song from Flashdance. He won multiple. He won the Oscar for Take My Breath Away from Berlin on Top Gun. He wrote Highway to the Danger Zone with Kenny Loggins. I mean, and then he's famously kind of had a little bit of a comeback because he did a song with Daft Punk on Random Access Memories. So he's
legit.
Yes, he's a big, big deal. Well, he won the bidding war between Bowie to get Metropolis. And originally he was just going to do a score. He was just going to put a score over it. Now, I'm going to play the original Metropolis score, the beginning, about a minute of it. And then we're going to play Giorgio's one. So not quite the craft work.
No, I mean, it's fine. It's like the beginning to most movies.
Yeah. And again, this was the 1920s. They didn't have synthesizers and stuff. But Marauder felt first and foremost that, okay, this is how we're going to modernize movie. On top of, before I talk about the score, he also, and he did this with the blessing of UFA, the German company that owns all this stuff. And their top film archivist worked with him on this. They tinted the print to kind of colorize it and make the underground world very kind of bluish gray and the above ground world, Metropolis, bright. And actually, if you go through as with like, I'm going to sound like a huge film dork and stuff, but go through with an eye on the movie, there's like 30 different tintings in there.
There's a lot of different colors.
Also something else, two other things Marauder did is he sped the frame rate up a little bit. And he, instead of usually you'd see the action, then it'd be a card, and then you'd see the action, and be a card. He did subtitles. He got rid of most of the cards. So,
which I appreciated greatly when I was watching.
So again, he decides to put a score on it. And here's the main theme of Marauder's Metropolis. The score is called Machines.
Yeah, I was in. I heard
this too. And this is where it kicks up immediately.
Yeah.
I'm cutting it off even before the brass band comes in. There's these horns. I go, Durr! I mean.
Yeah. Like I said, I was, again, sitting in my car while my son up the game, so I wouldn't interrupt him, just vibing out as soon as this movie started.
No,
I just swear the people who walked by me were like, it's with this weirdo.
Yeah, no, it's now regarded a good score. We'll talk about it at its time. And again, by the time Giorgio Moroder presents Fritz Lane's Metropolis, which is a full name of this thing, he's a name. Giorgio Moroder is a big name. People know who he is. And when he first, he was just going to put the score over the film and realize this thing has been cut so badly that he and the archivist over at UFA are like, we essentially have to recut this movie and kind of put it back together. And they found Theo von Harber's original novel and they found a script. So this, what they did is put together the most complete version of this movie that anybody had ever seen.
Until he even mentioned something like that in the beginning.
Right? Yeah, right, right. He has a couple title cards where he says, and the one, there's a few changes that were made, one of which is the original movie says it takes place in the year 3000. This says it takes place in 2026. I think he just wanted to do it 100 years from when the novel was written.
Sure.
And it was also the big thing, like I told you, Ty, this is for art houses and stuff. This was a major theater release. Because
I can see that being an issue.
Yes.
For critics and stuff.
On top of just the colorization, which is very controversial for films, and when they color.
I don't care.
I mean, look, there is part of it, because I'll talk about the most complete version we have of it. Black and white is filmed with intent. Yeah. People like Fritz Lang knew it was going to be black and white, so it's lit a certain way. And there. Okay. Is one particular scene of this movie, and it's a scene where the robot's becoming Maria, where you could tell, like, I remember you see the black and white version, and it looks way more striking.
Okay.
So Marauder, though, wanted people to watch this movie. So he called up a bunch of his music friends, Freddie Mercury, Bonnie Tyler, Pat Benatar, Adam Ant, John Anderson of Yes, a couple that we probably don't know as well, like Cycle V. They did the Blood from a Stone song.
Okay. But
all these people were big deals, all right, at the time.
Yeah. When I saw those other names, like, and, you know, Pat Benatar is no Adam, that's no joke. When I saw Freddie Mercury, I was like, holy shit, they got some big names.
Yes, they did. So they, and I mean, as a matter of fact, the album, Freddie Mercury's song, Love Kills, is the lead single on the album. They put the album out. They had the movie out. Is there anything about the plot you want to talk about? Dude that's rich sees a poor lady.
Yeah, we talked about it. Well, that's, I love that at the beginning when he's in the Garden of Joy or whatever they call the garden that he's in. He's dancing with this woman and she's like being very sexual towards him. But then he sees Maria and he just essentially shoves her to the side. Like, get out of here. But no, like when we talked about it, it's upper and lower class people working in the city or whatever, very ahead of its time. To make it even more ahead of its time, like they put a woman in the lead role playing the villain and the hero, and she knocked it out. Mm-hmm. Like I was impressed with everybody's performance. I particularly was a big Rotwang fan
Rotwang.
I liked him because I liked that crazy character that was in the movie and everything. But Maria was just a powerhouse, and seeing the robot, because I always saw that picture. I've always had that picture from the DVD that you had when we lived together in my mind. So actually seeing it on screen, and like, I love that about Marauder's score too, is how he made the sound of the robot walking when she gets up and walks the first time. It's your typical upper class versus lower class stuff, but with just an absolute powerhouse performance from the actress who played Maria.
This is obviously 1920s Weimar Republic, Germany. Very, very, very weird. I remember my wife saying it a few times. The one time when the machine blows up and then Frederick looks at it and it looks like a huge temple. They call it the Temple of Moloch, just eating the workers. Or there's the seven deadly sins and there's the Grim Reaper.
Then he's playing a flute with a bone.
Yes, yeah. There, something I do find very interesting is for those of you that don't know this movie, you know this movie. It's a very, very well-told tale. When you first meet Maria in the underground and you see she's kind of the leader of the workers, she's talking about...
A peaceful leader, though.
Yes. She's talking about the story of the biblical story of Babel. And the original biblical story of Babel is, it's early on, and yes, I'm going to use my Bible cred here, people. Babel was built by the people of Earth that they wanted to build a tower to God. And God got all pissed off, so knocked it down and spread all the people around the Earth and made them speak different languages. And that's how Christians explain that we have different languages today. what I found interesting about Fritz Lang's movie is Babel was a tower conceived by the rich people, but built by the poor people.
Yep.
And when the poor people figured that out, they got pissed and they tore Babel down.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that an interesting way that he, and it's funny, you know, when the whole thing is the head of Metropolis, Federer, wants to discredit Maria. And Rotwang had, he loved this woman named Hell, who is a character we lose in Marauder's version, but she is in the completed one, who he loved her, but she fell in love with Frederson and then died giving birth to Frederer. So Rotwang wants to kill Frederer. And he builds this robot to be like Hell. It's H-E-L for those of you.
Yeah.
It's German. But Frederick's son, the head of Metropolis, wants to discredit Maria. So he tells Rotwang to turn the robot into Maria. And now she's crazy. She's and not just crazy, but she's like very... The scene where she's dancing at the club. And
again, props to that actress in that time. Wearing pasties over her. Like, she could have gotten in a lot of trouble from people, especially in Germany.
But I told my wife, I said, again, this movie's 1927. I go, think about this. This is a bunch of dudes, rich dudes, tech bros, all obsessing over this techno woman or whatever. She's destroying them. And then you have a scene.
She's inciting violence.
Yeah. Now, this is Lost in Marauder's version. There's one little scene where Rotwang does say, I think I've lost control of Maria. In the full version, it goes more and more about how Rotwang wants to destroy Metropolis. That's where the robot Maria incites all the workers to break the machines and destroy everything. And
that's how Fredder knew it wasn't the real Maria.
Exactly. And then you have Grot, the head of the workers, is like, you're going to kill your children. They're all like, we don't care. And then they flood the city and real Maria and Frederer and Frederer's buddy Josephot save the kids. And then
Maria escapes Rotwang also.
Yeah, right. And then the workers are like, oh, she did this to us. Let's go burn her at the stake. And Frederer's like,
and she's laughing the entire time she's on fire. And she's a robot.
Yeah, right. And then you see it melt away. She's a robot. And then Rotwang sees real Maria, goes crazy, chases her up onto a roof. Frederer there. They fight. Rotwang falls to the death.
Good fight scene for 1927.
Oh, no, it's really, really good. You have Rotwang falls to his death. And then Maria, in her sermon earlier, she talks about how the workers and the lords and ladies of Metropolis should not fight. They're the head. We're the hand. You need an intermediary. You need the heart that is going to bring them together. And at the end, Frederer realizes he's that heart. And Maria encourages him. And the movie ends with Grot and Frederson shaking hands and everybody's happy.
Well, and that's the thing, too. Frederer is this rich kid who sees wrong and decides he's going to make a change. Now, he's not the hero of this movie. I will say Maria is by far the hero of this movie. But it is so poignant for what is going on right now. In America, where we live, we need more Marias and Fredders. Fredder and
her. Yeah, that's, yeah. But and they're German. We're not German. So,
we need more people like them in America.
Oh, yeah.
Fighting against what's wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so most of the plot of that movie was kept intact for Marauder's version. Again, when this came out in 1984, this is the most complete version of this film we have, which means we have lost an hour of this movie. And part of it, I did say he did speed up the frame rate a little bit and getting rid of the title cards. That probably saved.
I love that it was an hour and 23 minutes.
Marauder puts this movie out. Like I said, a major, major film release. Now, I'm going to go and play Siskel and Ebert's comments on it. The movie they had reviewed on the exact same episode of this show, Ty, was Buckaroo Banzai. So that's when was out. So nice. I'm going to play this.
And Metropolis itself has a vision of a totalitarian future in which a giant city without a soul is inhabited by consumers on the upper levels and slaves in the factories below. This is one of the most exciting movies to watch that you're ever going to see. And the Giorgio Moroder soundtrack is a nice addition, I think. I think it works. The modern rock music sounds oddly appropriate when it's played under those visionary futuristic images. Metropolis is still and probably always will be a great movie experience.
Certainly Metropolis is. And the addition of the color tinting and the music, where it's the synthesizer that he uses, that's great. Mm-hmm. But there are rock lyrics, about 10 songs. It's an only 87-minute movie, so every 8 minutes we get a song. And we don't need the lyrics to tell us what's going on in the movie. The movie is very clear about what it's doing, and the subtitles are great, too. So this movie bugs me every 8 minutes, and that's why, although I love it, it could be so much better if they just give us music, songs.
I didn't mind the lyrics. I was reminded of Pink Floyd, The Wall, which also has lyrics. And it seems to me that with rock music of this sort, you don't necessarily listen to every single word anyway. It's the mood, and the singer's voice becomes another instrument. And it seemed to me that it worked in connection with the film.
The instrument was loud enough for me to hear what they were singing. They were singing stupid things.
They weren't mad about the colorization. They weren't mad about the score. But Gene Siskel was sure as hell mad about all the songs.
That was my favorite one. I thought the music was rad. And we talk about it on here. I usually agree with Gene Siskel's reviews. Mm-hmm. Him and I usually align. But here, I fully disagree. The music from the start, when you played the intro theme that they're playing over there, I was in. And with each new song and they each showed up, it made me pay even closer attention to what was going on, because I wanted to see how the music meshed with the story that they were telling. Rest in peace, Gene Siskel. I adored you when you did your show, but I definitely disagree. I agree that this movie is great. I disagree with you saying the songs are bad.
Well, the critics just ripped Marauder apart. They were like unnecessary, gaudy. It was nominated for 2 Raspberry Awards, worst song for Freddie Mercury's Love Kills, and worst musical score by Marauder.
What?
Bonnie Tyler, though, was nominated for Best Female Rock Performance for the song she did in the movie, partially because of the music, all the different rights and everything like that. This version kind of disappeared. Hmm. I remember the first time I saw it was in college, and it was like a bootleg copy. This was in a film class we had. Because nobody could release it because of the rights of the movie. And Marauder was kind of a little pissed off that people were like, oh, you ruined Metropolis. And he's like, I didn't ruin it. I had to remake it.
He made a different version. I mean, he made a more complete version.
Yeah. So it kind of disappeared. Now, there's a film company called Kino, K-I-N-O. They're known for, they've been around since like the 70s, that they put out copies of classic film. And they were the only ones that had like a copy of Metropolis that was like 80 minutes long. Now, Kino merged with another company, so people know the company as Kino Lorber today. But Kino International was able to get all the rights together and release a DVD Blu-ray version of Marauder's Metropolis, which I have. Looks incredible. But the guy who worked with Marauder in trying to put the film back together, he was kind of excited. He tried to put a more complete version, and he went all over the world looking for just pieces of this movie. Mm. He was able to put out a 109-minute version in 1987. Okay. Now, even though the critics were kind of assholes, Marauder's Metropolis was pretty popular. So it led to kind of this big move of all these people trying to remake this movie, trying to not remake it, but find the original piece. And it set off decades-long search, and people would use Marauder's version as their baseline.
Oh, nice. I like that.
Yeah. Well, July of 2008, in a museum in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, in a back room, somebody found the entire movie.
In 2008, somebody found this in Buenos Aires?
Yes.
So did Lang like move there and just stuff it?
Oh, well, no, nobody knows to this day. Now, about 25-30% of it was unusable. It had just degraded. It was gone. They were not able to fully put it together. But UFA, a bunch of film preservationists, Kino Lorber said they were going to go ahead and distribute it. They put together what is called the complete Metropolis, which is 2 hours and 23 minutes long. So it's still, that's 12 minutes that has been lost to all of time.
Wow. I mean, I guess it makes sense too that it would degrade like that and everything, but to live in an alternate universe where maybe we get to see this entire movie, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. And it is completely online. It's in the public domain. People can watch it.
I watched it on YouTube.
Well, you watch, that's the Marauder version. I'm talking about this whole complete Metropolis. There is a Blu-ray of it and all that other stuff. It is in black and white. It has the original score. I mean, not the original score, the score done by a more modern orchestra. It is what they think is the best we are ever going to find of this movie.
Sure.
That is going to have it all. And I'm going to be honest with you. People are going to be like, well, Marauder, he changed it. They're like, the character of Hell was completely dropped out of it. To be honest, because I've seen the full one, you're not losing anything. You're losing that performance, sure.
You get the idea, though, when you first meet, again, Rotwang, however you say his name. When you first meet him in the movie, you're like, oh, this is a crazy guy whose wife either died or left him and
has
created this robot. I mean, that's what I thought right away when I saw.
No, that's what I'm saying is I understand the film snobs and it must be in its original form. And this is how the author expected it to be or whatever. Look, the guy who made the movie, Fritz Lang, was kind of like, yeah, it's a movie. It's okay. Do what you want.
I think we like lionize and hold these things so close to our heart. But yeah, I bet you if we met Morneau, he'd be like, Nosferatu's fine, but people nowadays, it's the greatest. And with this, Metropolis, the greatest sci-fi movie, I'm sure Lang was like, it's a movie. I had fun. I tortured some of my actors, but I had fun making this movie.
I mean, Fritz Lang, this is the movie he's most known for, obviously, but probably second, I want to say it's his first talking film. There's a movie called M, that it's just the letter M, but like a child murderer that the police are trying to track down, but the Berlin underground is getting really upset about all the police activity. So they track him down and put him on trial. It is a crazy movie.
I wish we had more movie makers like that now, because I'm so sick of retreads are, and I know it's all been done. Like you said, there's so many instances of people who have taken from this movie, and I recently listened to the Scott Hasn't Seen episode where they did The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, and they talked about how so many movies have stolen from that, and I get it, it's hard, but I wish we had so many more movies like Everything Everywhere All at Once than more super, and my son is very excited about seeing Thunderbolts, and I'm going to go see it with him, but I honestly could care, I would rather watch Metropolis.
Yeah, oh yeah. Like I said, people listening to this, they know that this movie's influential. I mostly want to give some shine to this Marauder version, because if you think about why this movie is influential, now I was wrong, it's not 73, it's 78 when Kraftwerk did Man Machine. The people who knew about Metropolis, people like David Bowie, people like Kraftwerk, they were influenced by it. They did something with it. Ralph McQuarrie, when he was doing the drawings for C-3PO, he used the Maria Ben. Yeah, as kind of, or it's called the Machine Mensch as his thing. But if you look at after Marauder's version, I'm going to go through, Ty, people who have used pieces of this movie, okay, or have been inspired by it. Queen and Radio Gaga uses clips from the movie. Obviously, Freddie Mercury also did a song for it.
Yeah.
Madonna's Express Yourself, Whitney Houston's Queen of the Night, System of a Down did some stuff. It's been all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
The big one I want to talk about is Janelle Monáe, Lady Prince.
Janelle Monáe rocks for people who, you want to listen to good music, listen to Janelle Monáe.
So Janelle Monáe is basically, somebody described her as the only true sci-fi musician out there.
Yeah.
And her very first, it was kind of a shorter album, but her very first,
her Thundercat, just because Thundercat's an alien playing bass.
Well, yes, sorry. Yeah. But she came out in 2007 with a short album called Metropolis Suite the Chase. And it's about her alter ego is Cindy Mayfeather, I think, or something like that. Cindy Mayweather is this android in the community of Metropolis. And her whole first thing is essentially about, now I'm going to try to explain some of this when Janelle Monáe herself said there is no explaining. It's
what podcasts are for, dude. For us to explain the unexplainable.
She did this thing basically about this android who is running from the people that are trying to take her out. And I'm going to end the whole podcast on part of her song, Many Moons, which is one of the more famous songs from that. But right after she did Metropolis Suite One, she came out with the album Arch Android, which the cover of this album is her wearing like a crown that is the city of Metropolis.
Oh, okay.
So, and
very cool.
When I was talking about the Tower of Babel, like Frederson's building is like this massive building sitting in the middle of Metropolis. And that's what this kind of like headset she has with it. And she's gone on to do a Dirty Computer. And there's supposedly three parts of her Metropolis project. But yeah, this is what she's inspired by. This is what she all loves. And as time's gone on, when I was doing the research for it, obviously the complete Metropolis is the one that everybody's like, you got to go watch.
I'm probably going to watch it at some point now.
Yeah. But when I went through and I went through Reddit, a few other articles reassessing Marauder's version of Metropolis. Everybody's like, look, it's hard to get anybody to sit down for 2.5 hour silent film, especially a German one. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You sit people down for less than 90 minutes. And yeah, like I asked my wife the next day, was that a good movie? And she said, that's impossible to say. Because you cannot discount what Metropolis means to filmmaking. The Lumiere brothers, the first people to make a movie, the first movie, the train coming towards the audience, and half the audience went out screaming and stuff. I mean, the power of these things and what Metropolis set down, the basis it set, it's as important as something as Nosferatu, or when it comes to physical comedy, The General, or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say, is this a good movie or not a good movie? She didn't like the songs.
I adore your wife. Yeah. We've been friends forever. I disagree. The moment after I saw the movie, again, in my car, I'm like, that movie ripped. Let me turn on the soundtrack. Is kind of how I looked at it.
There was, I will say, so there's when they're tearing the city apart, and then you have Lover Boy, destruction!
I love it.
No, and I have the album. I will listen to it front to back. I think it's really, really good. It helps that the very last song on the B-side is Marauder's main theme for it, so it ends off really well.
Well, it plays a lot throughout.
Oh, it does. No, it does. Yeah. But I did tell my wife that there is in Metropolis, I think there is a perfect music cue. Okay. I think that Cycle V song, the Blood from a Stone, when the workers are going in, I think it's very atmospheric. I think it's nice.
Oh, yeah.
The Bonnie Tyler song, while Robot Maria is just going nuts, is really, really good. But at the very end of the movie, in the Pat Benatar song, where it's the score. It's a more like romanticized version of Marauder's score.
Exactly what you're talking about.
But there is when you hear her talking and stuff, and you see Maria tell Frederick, you gotta bring be the heart of the hand and the head or whatever. And then right when they go to shake hands, Marauder fades it out, and then the Pat Benatar song just kicks up to 11, and it's like by Fritz Lang.
It is great. I said, it made me hype. It did. Like, I thought, man, I should watch this movie. Like David Bowie, I was probably like, I should watch this movie again.
any final thoughts on Fritz Lang's or Giorgio Moroder presents Fritz Lang's Metropolis?
I will say I'm shocked at the amount of people who don't like the music, people who I trust who don't like the music, because I guess the older I get, I'm more into like the synthy, you know, new wavy type music. So I just find myself enjoying that. It's one of these movies. Now I'm going to, like I said, I'm probably going to watch the original copy that you are, the complete one. Obviously not the original, it's a complete one, because I want to see what the stuff I miss. But to have a blind spot like this of a movie I've known about for years and years and years and never watched, and because I'm such a big sci-fi fan, this is where it all started. This is one of one. There's going to be nothing else ever like it. It really made me think. I really enjoyed it. Maria, the actress who played Maria, both Marias, was just a powerhouse performance. And with what we have going on right now, and just how shitty America is, and how there's worse and worse things happening every day, I think this is like an incredibly important movie, especially for people my age to watch. And if you don't want to watch the 2.5 hour version, you have this very put together, very well put together, very a much shorter version that you can literally get done while you sit in your car and watch it on your iPhone. Like, I think everybody needs to see this movie. I would love for my kids to be shown this movie in school, so you can see, like, this is what happens when things start going bad. And the current political climate we live in, this movie is just so prescient, important for everybody to see now.
I want to make this point. This is the final point I wanted to make this movie, because I go back to the H.G. Wells talking about how the movie is depressing, or you use the idea of dystopic. And now H.G. Wells, he wrote War of the Worlds, okay, which is, I read that recently, the original book, and it is brutal. It is a much more violent book than I remember.
No, okay.
But he is the godfather of science fiction, okay? Yeah. There are scenes in Metropolis, just people know, that are taken almost shot for shot in the movie, one that Emma Stone, where she played the Franken, why can't I think of it?
Poor Things.
Poor Things. I kept wanting to say Strange Things. Yeah. Poor Things. The whole sequence where Willem Dafoe is like bringing her to life. Mm-hmm. If you watch it, that is the whole Maria sequence.
I'm going to have to watch it.
Yeah. And that's done on purpose. I'm not saying, oh, you know, your girl is, that's a guy.
Your girl's a lot.
Yes. He didn't steal it. He's a.
Sinoma.
Yeah, it is. But this movie, I think, is important in that when Maria, the good Maria, is talking about the story of Babel and the people who designed it, made the workers build it, and then the workers tore it down. This movie does not end with them tearing it down. They were trying to tear it down. This movie ends with the lords and ladies of Metropolis joining with the workers for a better future. Okay? And I think a lot about these sci-fi movies, these dystopic sci-fi films. And a movie I will defend a lot, and I know people like it, but I kind of like it more than the original, which I know is wrong in a lot of people's hearts, is Blade Runner 2049.
The original's better. Blade Runner 2049 is good too.
Blade Runner 2049 has weirdly an incredibly hopeful and positive ending.
I agree with that.
Watching Metropolis, this 100-year-old movie, okay? This movie is almost 100 years old. Yep. Has that positive message. It doesn't end with destruction. It doesn't end on darkness. It ends on hope, which I think is really, really important. But having know that hope is because the two parts of the world, the underworld and the overworld, are going to work together. So
Well, and just this sheer fact that take this rich kid, born, grew up with every advantage in the world, and yet he saw something wrong. As did Maria, who was part of the poor people, you know, the underworld people, and they didn't fight one another. And they, again, I just keep going back to her performance because her performance as Robot Maria is incredible.
No, it's really good.
Absolutely incredible. And then you see her as good Maria, and it's like, man, this, I'm blown away. And yeah, it's a person who's lived there, who is preaching peaceful protesting, and then a person who's born with every advantage seeing this isn't right. And I do got to say, and I know it wasn't meant for it, but I laughed at him turning the arms of the clock because I thought that whole scene was hilarious. But no, I think you get those, like you said, two totally separate worlds, yet these people come together for the greater good.
Brigitte Helm is the name of the actress. She was 18 when she did it.
What a performance. Good God.
She had a film contract that expired in 1935, so she was still not even 30 yet. She got married and decided to retire from film because, quote, she's disgusted with the Nazi takeover of the film industry.
Good for her. See, there are. You never think about it in modern time. We're like, there's nobody who thought like I did back then. But there's clearly a lot of people who have the same, see what's wrong with the world and they want to make a change. So good for her.
All right, Ty. Well, where are people going to find you when you need to come merge their hearts and hands? Hands and heads.
Making Metropolis, I want the role of the, you know, I call him chubby guy. I want that because I feel like I can play that. But he probably weighed like 180 pounds. Wow. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram, TYKULIK, all lowercase. Come read my stuff on Seedsing, SEEDSING.com. You can listen to me on a few episodes of Chucklehead Chat, hosted by our buddy Glenn Adams. Listen to me on our main feed, the Ex-Millennial Man podcast. We're back at it, doing our thing. And I just want to say I appreciate you telling me and having me watch this movie, even if it isn't the complete movie, because I have not stopped thinking about it. I watched it on Sunday, and I've not stopped thinking about it since then. I'm all in on this movie, and I think it's fantastic. So listen to this podcast, go watch the movie, all that other good stuff that we do. And as always, Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, and this is a bigger conversation down the road, but a big reason the story of this movie fascinates me is the fact that we don't have it. And we don't have the director's original version, even if it's almost 2 hours and 40 minutes long. But it's
of a silent movie.
Yes, yes. we're never going to have it. And
yep.
It's why I'm a big proponent of physical media and stuff like that. Because
you are
we
me.
I know. But it's like just one day. I mean, Disney Plus made an entire show about the movie Willow and then just took it off air and
gone.
Those people's work. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, so.
Gone.
Without that being, or without going too far into that time, I'm going to go out with some of the funkiest funk that we could ever think that some weirdo German director in the 1920s would think that some, I mean, just look, I think Janelle Monáe is beautiful, but she's a Lady Prince, just
yeah,
vibing out into her own version of Metropolis. So here's Many Moons, and talk to you next time, Tom.
Take it easy.
This has been a Public Forum Productions. Find all of our shows at publicforumproductions.com or wherever you find your podcasts.